Hello again, I'm Drew Wilder, and it is Your Business with Stan Sadlack from Steeplechase Advisors, LLC. And we're on with you every weekend at this exact time. And Stan has been helping businesses since 1976, 50 years in key areas that will help a business or have a business go down the tubes if they don't get the right advice and follow the right path. And that's with real estate, taxes, insurance, asset protection, business succession, even personnel problems. And you can always get in touch with Stan at 860-524-3408. At the end of the show, we'll tell you how you can get a no-fee initial consultation. Stan, welcome back to the Talk of Connecticut.
Thank you, Drew. Great to be here.
Now, you're the guy who tried to bring the Whalers and the Patriots to Hartford, both?
Well, I kind of got a little involved with that back at the time, so I was obviously a Whalers fan. I used to love to watch hockey. And I felt that Hartford at that time was really benefiting by having a professional hockey team. And when Governor Weicker came into office and instituted the state income tax, you know, he then became very active with Karmanos, who mm-hmm. ended up buying the Whalers mm-hmm. and moving them to North Carolina. So I tried to lead a resistance to having them move because the Whalers at the time was the most successful independent hockey organization in America. It wasn't owned by a big corporation. Mm-hmm. It was owned by several, you know, entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And it did very, very well with its attendance and operations. And my hat goes off to all of them. But when he decided to Governor Weicker go along with Karmanos relocating to the other state, the resistance was impossible to counter. And, you know, Governor Weicker eventually went on to be on the board of directors of Karmanos' company after he left office. But I then got involved with Governor Rowland and Jody Rell mm-hmm. trying to bring the Patriots to Hartford. I was on the task force with Lieutenant Governor Rell, and that was a very interesting experience. In my heart, I don't believe the Patriots ever had any intention of coming to Hartford. They were using us from day one.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
It was a good learning experience for me at the time.
Which would have been better? Having the Whalers stay in Hartford or having the Patriots land in Hartford?
I think looking back, probably the best thing that could have happened to Hartford would having Steve Wynn put at the casino downtown. When I look at what's happened down at the yeah. Mohegan Sun, you know, in the Foxwoods, and at the time I was not in favor of the casino, I have to admit. But if it had been there, I think Hartford would be a very different city today.
So now they're talking about sports betting at the XL Center. How important is that to the survival of Hartford?
I think that's awful.
Really?
I do not
so
believe
don't think
in
that's...
sports betting at all. It's the beginning of the end of sports. Look, we went through this over the years with the White Sox scandal, yeah. or better known
yep,
as the
Black Sox
scandal. Yep. It's inevitable. It's going to occur. The question is not if, the question is when.
Right. So why is that such a bad thing if sports betting comes to Hartford?
Well, because I'm not sure it's going to really help Hartford itself. It's too little, too late. I think the only way, and I don't mean to digress into mm-hmm. this, but the only way you're going to rebuild Hartford is they constantly are looking for white knights to come to town.
Right.
And you know, Gene Pitney had a great song called "The Town Without Pity."
Yeah.
Well, that's Hartford.
Right.
You know, they like to bring these people in or white knights and then just empty their pockets out.
Right.
And, you know, as we talked earlier, I said, you know, I've been in Hartford since the late 70s mm-hmm. and I own real estate. I'm just a little guy. So Mike Peters and I used to get together all the time. He'd invite me over to his house. Mayor Perez and I would have breakfast on a regular basis. And, you know, I never hear from anybody over the last 10 years. And I'm a small guy. I only pay $300,000 a year in property taxes. So, you know, they want the white knight.
Yeah.
And that's not going to change the city. What you need is small business mm-hmm. coming in, filling up the shop space, have people walking up and down the streets. And that, you know, whether you do it through an enterprise zone or – some other form but of economic development. You have to get people living and working downtown. And it's, you know, we shouldn't count on Travelers to save the day or Hartford Steam Boiler to save the day. We should count on trying to stimulate an economic environment where small business can blossom and people can succeed. And it's just so much regulation, so many fees to open a business. Mm-hmm. And how many restaurants can you open and close in a year downtown?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nobody downtown.
Right.
And then when you come downtown to go to dinner, you're going to pay another $10 to park and eat.
Right, right. So it's interesting. So there's no like magic bullet, that one thing. I mean, usually steady and consistency is what works anywhere in life. In a business, I mean, whether it's staying fit or whether it's running a business, but I mean, how important is it to have if you don't think sports betting is the answer, is to have business really flourish? What's maybe it's not one thing, but what would you recommend if you were the new mayor of Hartford, Stan Sadlak, Steeplechase Advisors, and what would you recommend for Hartford to keep the city flourishing?
Yeah, I would create a downtown zone, which is an enterprise zone, and I would have there be free parking on the street, you know, not sitting there getting parking tickets all the time. I would offer validated parking with a deal with the city for parking garages.
Mm-hmm.
And I would let the people who are opening businesses be there tax-free for a period. I mean, if you take a look in Hartford, the biggest problem with the finances in Hartford is all the nonprofits.
Right.
There's more nonprofits than there are profits.
And that's why taxes are so high.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's a great idea. It seems so obvious. It's kind of like a promotion that we do in radio.
Well, but that's what we get into in business is nothing more than common sense.
Right.
I mean, we're having so many problems politically because all these politicians they've never met payrolls. They don't understand common sense. So it's like when you go shopping with your wife and you look at what you buy, you know, do you buy frills or do you buy common sense things that you need at home?
Right.
And it's the same thing when it comes to dealing with employees and communicating with employees.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to use common sense. You know, you don't drive up to your place of business in a Lamborghini and walk in and not talk to any of your people and go into your office.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, I don't care if the Lamborghini is 25 years old and your great-grandmother gave it to you.
Yeah, makes a statement, the wrong statement.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to – you don't want to be friends with your employees, but you want to have mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people want to work together. It's like I always use the analogy of a baseball team.
Mm-hmm.
You got to gel the people in the right positions. And really, what is the position of the coach? Well, in my world, the coach is like a chess player.
Mm-hmm.
The baseball game is a chess game.
Mm-hmm.
We got two coaches, that are playing against each other.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you move around? What do you do next? And you can say the same thing about football or basketball, any sport.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's really a chess game and putting it together. And you don't need tremendously talented people. You can have a group of mediocre people, but if they come together in a synergistic way, they're going to do terrific. So it gets into how do you train those people? How do you work with them? And how do you build an organization? There are so many people that go from being a very good player to wanting to become a player coach to becoming a coach. Those transitions are not easy. And sometimes the best coaches are people who were never good players.
Right.
So
it doesn't follow just because you're a good player that you're going to become a good manager or coach.
Right.
Yeah. And that is a very common path. You look at sports. Yeah.
Right. There's not a big difference between running a sports team and running a business. And the question is where you first have to answer to yourself, what do you want to be? Do I just want to be by myself and run my business? Do I want to build an organization? What do I want for business succession?
Mm.
And how is that going to operate? Most people don't even think about this.
So how do you help with that? I mean, business succession is probably something people don't think about when they're running a business, get into business. It's the inevitable can happen easily. It just happened to one of my friends, clients, owned one of the biggest imaging company in New England, right here in the Hartford area. And I get a text from someone, this guy just died of a massive heart attack. So I'm thinking, of course, I'm shocked and still upset about it. Now it's a few days later, but yeah, I'm thinking now, who's going to take over his bit? What's going to happen to this business? So is that people don't really think about what's next in the succession?
No. I mean, I will always ask somebody, do you have a will? Do you have a trust? You know, probably what provisions have you made in that process? Do you have a buy-sell agreement with a key person? Do you, what kind of entity? I mean, there's a whole slew of questions that get asked along the way, but typically people don't want to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And you have to flush that out. Now, one of the ways it used to get flushed out, very interestingly, is through life insurance agents. So life insurance agents, going back, you know, for 100 years. My mom was, by the way, the first licensed life insurance saleswoman in the state of Massachusetts.
Really? First?
Yeah, she went to work for Metropolitan Life right out of college, and she was the first in the state of Connecticut.
She was ahead of her,
state of
her
Massachusetts.
Time. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, and in those days, it was all relationship selling. So, you know, they would go around each week and collect the premiums. People would pay weekly. So, very, very interesting. Well, so that is a situation where life insurance would typically are well-trained. They would go call on people, and they would really get people to think about taking care of their family in the event of their death.
Yeah. And that would trigger
other things.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But what ended up happening is in the 70s, that continued, in the 80s, the life insurance industry started to fall apart. Mm. So all these very well-trained life insurance agents – we're now having to become self-employed entrepreneurs.
And why did it change?
Because the insurance companies decided to eliminate the agency system and go through what we call brokers. So the previous agents who now became brokers would be still, you know, going out and seeing the people, but they would represent a lot of different companies. Yeah. The offset to that is they could get better products, but they got no back office support. And then as we got into the 90s, that spread became greater and greater. There were no new people coming out of college going into training programs of learning what life insurance is all about, what estate planning is all about, to the point where we're at today that there's maybe only a couple companies left that have that type of training. So the reason I bring this up is that as I go in and meet with the company and I start asking the questions about death and dying and estate planning, this is all new to them.
And they
sometimes they don't
it.
Even have life insurance because nobody's ever called on them. That's not unusual.
How do you bring that up? I mean, how do you seg into that? Are you talking to a restaurant about the food and the customers and, oh, by the way.
Well, I mean, I'm usually talking with the owner at that point, and I say very succinctly, look, we have to look at all aspects of this. I mean, if you drop dead today, what's going to happen to this business? What's your family going to do? Do they have any clue where anything is at?
And again, we're talking with Stan Sadlak from Steeplechase Advisors, LLC, right here in Hartford, Connecticut. You don't have to call California and get some person putting you on hold for 25 minutes. Get Stan anytime at 860-524-3408. 860-524-3408. Matter of fact, if you call right now, Stan will get back to you on Monday. And at the end of the show, we'll tell you how you can get a no-fee initial consultation. Stan helps as we're talking about succession in a business, succession plans, personnel problems, real estate, insurance, taxes, really anything that keeps a business ahead and keeps a business moving. And there are more challenges now than, as we've been talking about on previous shows, more challenges now than ever before. So you go into a business and tell them you want to look at all aspects of the business, and one of them is succession plans. Are they, like, offended that you want to talk about life and death and what happens? I mean, people think they're inevitable, invincible if they're, like, 25, 35, 40 years old, a lot of people. How do they respond? Are people very receptive?
Well, they need to be. If they're not, if they are not, then I'm not right for them. Right. I mean, I have a situation, for example, I had down at the other end of the state, a person owned a successful company and, you know, decided, I mean, he was 87 years old and he wanted to sell the company. He had two key employees that wanted to buy the company, but he just couldn't bring himself to talk to the two employees about it. I mean, I talked to the employees, I would talk to him, but he didn't want to talk about death and dying.
Wow.
Just refused to accept it or, you know, passing the reins. They ran the business completely, but there was just a mental block, and I run into that frequently. People do not want to confront the reality of of their demise, and you have to do that. So I'm not there to be their friend. I'm there to tell them, look, these are issues that we have to deal with. And part of my role is finding the right people to help them. You know, for example, I'm not a mortgage broker, so I try to direct them to the right people. Mm-hmm. I'm not an estate planning attorney, so I try to bring in the right attorney. I'm not, and most businesses today need four or five attorneys. You need one for estate planning. You need one for labor. I mean, labor law is prime subject in today's world of having someone to brainstorm or an organization where you can reach out for that. So my role is to try to make sure they've got the right people. I just ran into a situation I was brought in on having to do with a restaurant, and it is being insured for numerous coverages. Well, anyway, make a long story short. So the owner of the building has a lease. And in the lease, it tells the people running the business, the real estate, the restaurant, they have to insure the building.
Okay. Yeah.
So they have a lease with the landlord. A year later, the building burns down. The landlord had no insurance, fire insurance. Because he believed that the tenant insured the building. Well, the tenant doesn't own the building. The tenant doesn't have an insurable interest. The tenant has a lease with the landlord. Now, he can have insurance on that lease to cover the cost of the lease, but it's going to be very interesting to see how the insurance companies and the lawyers sort this whole thing out. As of this moment, the owner of the building has no coverage. The tenants have coverage to pay for their lease and all their equipment, but not to pay to repair the building.
Sounds like a nightmare.
It is.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, we see this repeatedly where lessees have to have insurance on the building, but they don't have an insurable interest. So I'm watching this one very interestingly to see how it gets sorted out.
Wow. So you're really like an insurance. You are like an insurance policy for the business.
I don't know if I would say that. You know, everybody in today's world has their own task. I'm more of a generalist. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you bring in your accountant who does your tax return. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You bring in your attorney who deals with whatever the problem du jour, if you will. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, you've got your insurance guy over here, but there's nobody that really takes a look at the whole picture.
Yeah, the cohesiveness.
And how is it all tied together? I see this all the time with people with estate planning documents. They will do an estate plan. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. They will get it organized, but it's never coordinated. You know, they've got a trust, but none of the assets have been put into the trust. Huh. There's been no true asset protection. In theory, there has been, but practically none.
Now, I said you're like an insurance policy for a business because, I mean, if you miss one thing or make one mistake, the whole business could cave in. Or you could be liable, right, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I would say the number one item that business owners have to look at today is asset protection. You know, they're running a business or building a business, and they need to protect their personal assets. There are just so many lawyers, so many lawsuits that it's really it needs to be protected. And it's very helpful periodically to get a second opinion, whether it be on their insurance. You know, people doing a slip and fall, it may seem, no big deal. Well, it could be a big deal. One situation where one of my clients got sued because a woman fell on the sidewalk in front of the building.
Oh.
And so he said, I don't know anything about it. So he turns it over to the insurance company. they don't know anything about it. So on his own, he called. Supposedly, she was taken to the hospital. Right. He called the police to see if there's a police report. No. He called the hospital to see if this person ever came to the hospital. No. So he looked into it and he said, you know, this is a fraud.
So he made the whole thing up.
And he reported that to the insurance company and, you know, they did their investigation. They still ended up paying $5,000.
Really?
To the
that was all
and she was
up?
Living in Florida.
Oh.
I mean, it was a scam from day one.
Wow. So is that, I mean, business, I assume, has changed dramatically in your 50 years advising businesses at Steeplechase Advisors, right? I mean,
that's the understatement of the century.
I mean, how's it going to be in another 50 years? How's it going to be in 2 years?
Well, you know, that's really the key question everybody asks. You know, I say that to my son who's in the insurance business, and I say, so what are you doing to stay in business in 2 years, in 5 years? How is the business going to continue? He's the only independent insurance agent left in his town.
Wow.
His business is all over the state. I mean, they do very well, but it's a changing world. So every business owner, when they're driving home, has to say, okay, what am I going to do to stay in business in 2 years? Hmm. That has to be on your mind. If you put your head in the sand and keep going as is, forget it. Take a look at banking. You used to have to go to the bank, you know, by 3 o'clock and make your deposit. Now you take a mobile picture of the check and it clears the account of wherever it is in 2 hours.
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing. So you really got to stay up with trends and the news to try to figure out how to stay in business in 2 years.
Yeah, you
things change so fast.
Pay or play.
Pay or play, pay or play. So things have changed dramatically. What area do you think would be the biggest changes that you've seen in business?
Oh my gosh! I would say the communication and the regulation. I have to tie the two together because we have so much regulation that they have to keep up with. But at the same time, the communication, because we've gone through this metamorphosis of talking one-on-one to text messaging, to email, and it all happens so quickly that if somebody misses a text message or the email goes to the wrong address, it really creates tremendous problems. So we used to be able to do things by the mail, by certified mail, and then we became through fax machines. Then that progressed to the internet with email. Now that's progressed to the mobile phone. I mean, a little mobile phone is more powerful than the original $500,000 computer I bought in 1978.
Yeah. And so, it's getting faster and faster.
And that's going to continue. So unless we have a sunspot hit and everything gets wiped out, you know, it's going to continue to go rapidly.
So how can you help? How do you actually help a business when it comes to all these regulations, if that's one of the major changes?
You know, we got to take a break. Yeah. You know, I will frequently say, hey, let's meet for breakfast. Let's go meet for lunch. If we're working at the place of business, very hard to get anything done because they're being interrupted. You know, if they come to my place, I'm being interrupted.
Yeah.
I say, you know, let's just go. I don't do fancy lunches. We'll just go. It could be the hot dog truck. Doesn't matter. But let's go someplace where we can just talk interrupted for 30 minutes. And I prefer frequent segments. You know how you have a psychologist or a psychiatrist and you see them frequently?
Yep.
I'd rather see somebody for 25, 30 minutes on a regular basis, find out, okay, how did this go? How did that go? And then be able to verify what's going on with documents. You know, the old adage of Ronald Reagan, trust but verify.
Yep.
That's what you got to do in business.
Interesting. Now, so many people listening to our show, It's Your Business, every week at this time with Stan Sadlak from Steeplechase Advisors, they run very small businesses. I mean, a lot of businesses are one person or two people out of someone's home. Do you go to that type of business and help people, or is that just too small?
No, I mean, you know, I take a look at anything. For example, you know, I have the touch, see, feel type of Walmart shopping. You know, I'm not crazy about buying things on the internet. I'm not crazy about investing in non-real estate investments. I like to see things, touch things, know that they're for real. I like my money. I don't want Bitcoin. So I'm a little old fashioned in some of these ways. You know, it was funny. I never used ATMs or credit cards. I always had cash.
Huh.
But since COVID's come out, I basically pay for everything with a credit card now.
Right.
I never would have done that before. Go to Dunkin' Donuts would drive me crazy when people would pay $4.10 and have to, you know, go take out their ATM card and punch it all in. But I do the same thing now. And,
right.
And a lot of it is because I don't want the money. I don't want to touch the money.
Right.
You know, so and I worked throughout the pandemic completely because I had to be in my building. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm in a pretty good sized building. I'm the only one there, but I had to be if there was an emergency.
Wow. And so many people, as we've talked about, and we'll do future shows about remote working. People never went into their building and still aren't going.
Yeah. Let me go back to said, I look at small business as well. Small businesses become big businesses, and you got to try to recognize it.
Exactly, and that's very, very common. Never say no to the small guy, because small woman, small guy, whatever, will become a big business down the road. But and you mentioned Bitcoin, something it's not real. It's just the worst investment of my lifetime was when my wife bought a Bitcoin exchange and coin at $200 a share. Now it's forget where it is. I think it went up to like 20 or 21 or something like that, down like 85%. So tangibility is always a good thing. Talking with Stan Sadlak, which we do every week at this time. Stan is with Steeplechase Advisors. And Stan, how can people get in touch with you?
Just give me a call. My direct line is 860-524-3408. And as always, I will tell Drew, don't look back.
Don't look back unless you're listening to the Boston song from the 70s. And Stan's going to give the first three callers, is this true, a no-fee initial consultation?
Sure, I'm happy to talk to anybody and do an assessment.
860-524-3408. And again, Stan Sadlak, Steeplechase Advisors, right in Hartford, of all places. You don't have to go to the West Coast and get put on hold for 5 hours. Stan helps with taxes, insurance, real estate, asset protection, business succession, which we touched on, of course, personnel problems, which we touched on, and there are just so many different issues that can have a business go down the tubes or stay afloat and stay ahead, and that's where Stan comes in. Stan, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll speak to you next week at this time.
Sounds great, Drew.
It's your business, so you better care about it. 860-524-3408. And if Stan doesn't answer right now with other callers calling, he'll get back to you Monday morning. Thanks for listening. I'm Drew Wilder. Have a good weekend.